Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
As I said, I'm only on season 2 of the Zondo Report. I believe other people have started season 3. I want to know how it is. So, of course, there are going to be some spoiler alerts here. Sanusha Naidu, she's a senior research associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue. Good morning. Where to from here with the Zondo Commission?
Good morning, Howard, and good morning to your listeners. Yeah, I'm glad you're on season 2. I think I'm still making my way to season 1. The point is that it's quite a, I mean, you know, the three parts, as they call them, basically sketches a very depressing tale of how state capture had emerged, what were the implications, and who were the ones that are implicated in state capture. I think the last part that was presented to the president in the week really hit home on the basis of who are the implicated people in terms of the Bostasha case. Now, you've got a senior member of cabinet who at the time was not a senior member of cabinet, but the national chairperson, or secretary general, rather, of the ANC, and that is the Minister of Energy. So if you listen to his press briefing yesterday, talking about taking the report on review and the sections particularly that pertain to implications regarding him, this is basically now not even at the point where these reports have to be presented to Parliament by the President. That could only happen by about June, wow. Depending on timetable, depending on schedule, depending if it all goes according to the dates and so forth. But of course, there could be some delays. We're not sure what they are. The second point around this is, what does this mean going forward for the elective conference? But also, what does this mean going forward for the prosecutorial authorities in the country? Remember, the Zondo Commission never had any prosecutorial power. So what they are presenting there is the assessment based on the evidence that was given before the commission and how that evidence actually had to prove that state capture happened or establish the fact that state capture took place, and then, of course, link all of this evidence in a kind of cohesive way in terms of understanding that there was that through the evidence that there was a deliberate attempt, intention, to basically capture resources of the state through the SOEs, etc. Now, the problem is, or rather the challenge was, is for prosecuting authorities, is to go back and investigate further. Because what evidence exists that is under commission is just possible evidence, oral evidence. There still has to be a much deeper investigation in terms of the paper trail, in terms of where the paper trail is, where the evidence is, the empirical, etc. So I think it's going to be quite an interesting stance in terms of the fact that if you look at the recommendations in part one, I looked at the recommendations partly in part two, and I haven't looked at part three, but I suspect it's the same thing. And that is, there's a thread that forms in all three parts, in a sense where the commission, the Zondo, the head of the commission, Deputy Justice, Acting Chief Justice Zondo, is essentially saying he recommends for further investigation, he recommends that this is a person of interest, he recommends that the prosecuting authority look at this case, look at the situation in this context in further detail or in deeper detail. It's not really giving the prosecuting authorities much in terms of what does the next steps forward in terms of judicial process, in terms of prosecutorial process, etc. So there's still another layer before we act, in my opinion, that is, and I can be completely off the mark here. But there's still another layer here that has to happen before you can actually see some kind of punitive action taken. So again, we're sitting we're sitting between the doorway between the Zondo Commission and its findings and the prosecuting authorities.
And there's been a lot of money now allocated to the prosecuting authority, because it's very clear that they don't actually have what they need to be able to move forward with this. That's a problem, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the point is that even the Zondo Commission itself, I mean, there's a lot of money that was spent in terms of the amount of admin, the amount of evidence that had to be compiled, the amount of keys that were destroyed, and of course, it sat for four years and a bit. So I think the challenge right now is, in terms of the law and how the law operates, you know, you're not going to get an immediate, result in terms of the prosecuting authority saying, okay, through the Zondo Commission, we now have the evidence and we have conclusive evidence and beyond whatever else that they need to prove in the context of the law, that they can go ahead and start prosecuting. They've got to also do their investigation. And that's what I find intriguing about the report, because there is those recommendations that have been made, but because it was just a commission of inquiry and its terms of reference was not to basically make any kind of prosecutorial recommendation or powers, then of course the onus and proof falls back onto the state prosecuting authority. And this then can actually delay, procrastinate, etc., the process. We see how the legal system operates. We know that there are people that are being charged with corruption, senior members of the ANC, and their cases just being drawn out. So I think that on the one hand, it's important that the Zondo Commission released the result, its findings, released the fact that, and it did its job within the mandate that it, and the terms of reference that it was afforded. But at the same time, I think that what you and I want is what next? So what? What is going to happen to these people that have basically stolen money from the state?
Yeah. It's really interesting, and I was thinking about it earlier, and I'd love your thoughts. I'm going to ask listeners the same thing. Given the fact that the NPA has a limited budget, right? They can't, from small little cases to the massive cases. Now, the massive cases obviously take, you know, whether it's against Zuma or the top people, take a lot more money, a lot more time. But the bigger wins, whereas the smaller cases take less time, smaller wins, but you could probably move through more of them. Should the NPA be focusing on the smaller cases that are winnable or the larger cases that are higher priority and visibility but will take longer and might not be as easy to achieve? What do you think, Sunish? And what do you think, asking our listeners the same question, 34519 or 0618951019? Sunish, your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to be a difficult one as well for the NPA. Yes, the smaller wins are the smaller cases are easier to win because the people implicated are not such high-ranking officials or high-ranking personalities in our body politic of the state, as well as in the party. I think what we've got here is we want to know who are the ones that orchestrated this and how they benefited, and that goes to the proper end of this whole state capture project that was systematically put together by individuals that deliberately and with intent decided to steal money from the state. And I think that's the bigger challenge for the prosecuting authorities is how do you go after these major figures, these big personalities, these individuals who are seen to be the architects and the brain trust behind all of this. I think for me, does it have the same impact on the mindset of the South African public? Is who do you want to be held accountable for this? Is it okay to just say, yes, the smallest, the foot soldiers are held accountable and their punitive action is taken because it's an easier win for the prosecuting authority? Or what do you want? Do you want to see those people who have been sitting in high offices in government, sitting in very lucrative positions in SOEs and on boards, to be held accountable? And that's where it becomes complicated. The last thing I want to say on this, Howard, is let's not also declare ourselves or basically not recognize that the hawks have been doing a lot of asset seizures. So asset seizures is important as well, because it then looks at lifestyle audits and it looks at how the lifestyles have been run. And that means that it doesn't always have to be what we consider as the high level case that we're talking about, the one that goes to the court, the one that basically you charge people with this. You start seizing assets. and the Assets Force Teaching Unit has been doing that. I think that's also a telling sign where you take away people's resources at that point in time. And you say, in the case of what you're doing, and saying, you know what, you got this for ill-gotten means, so we're going to seize this, and we're going to base it. And I think that's one avenue where it may be an ability to bridge some of those spaces where we're still going to wait for the high-level cases to come to court, whereas you can start with this asset for teachers.
Sunusha Naidu, thank you. As always, a very, very interesting conversation about the Zondo Commission and the way forward in terms of prosecutions. It's 8:31.